Meeting of the Audit, Compliance, and Title IX Committee will be called to order. We'll have roll call from Angela.
Chair Carter.
Here.
Vice Chair Hayes.
Here.
Regent Del Carlo.
Here.
Regent Lieberman.
Here.
Regent McMichael.
Here.
Regent Perkins.
Here.
You do have a quorum.
Thank you. Now it's time for public comment. Do we have any public comment in Elko?
No public comment from Elko.
Any public comment in Reno?
No public comment in Reno.
Any public comment in Las Vegas? Seeing no public comment, we'll go on to item two, the committee orientation and background. I've asked Mr. Sunbury to kind of talk about the role of the internal auditor and our external auditor. As you recall in our, or you may or may not recall in our last meeting of the Audit and Compliance Committee, we decided that after about a decade, we would do another search for a external auditor. And that brings us to today and our three competitors that we have bidding on that project today. So, Mr. Sunbury.
Thank you, Chair Carter. Congratulations on your new role as chair of this committee, and welcome to our brand new committee members. I've had the pleasure of meeting most everyone in the room individually, but for the record, my name is Joe Sunbury, the Chief Internal Auditor here at ENSHE. So as Chair Carter noted, I've been asked to provide some brief remarks today to frame today's meeting and give some background to our new committee members. This meeting will be very different than your typical meeting flow. So why are we holding this special meeting of the Audit, Compliance, and Title IX Committee? So for those of you that weren't around, and as a refresher to those that were, on December 19th of last year, this committee held a special meeting with a number of agenda items, one of which was a discussion on its existing external audit contract. So it was noted at that meeting that despite a relatively recent renewal, it had been roughly a decade, as Chair Carter noted, since the contract had been bid, and ultimately citing best business practice, the committee voted to issue an RFP for the external audit services. Of note, as it relates to the presentation you'll see in a few moments, the incumbent firm was invited to bid. So after that meeting, the system immediately got to work to issue an RFP with a...
Bill, can I interrupt you real quick? Hey, whoever's on the phone, we can hear you clicking or something, so you may want to mute it, please. Thank you.
Oh, well done. I don't hear it anymore. I'll just start it where I was here. So the system got to work to issue an RFP with a fairly tight timeline. And the former audit committee chair identified members of a scanning committee consisting of an appropriate cross-section of ENSHE institutions and folks that would have a lot of interface with our external auditors. So institutional controllers, other accounting personnel, financial aid directors, and even a token internal auditor. And thank you again to those that provided their valuable time and input to the scanning committee. So that group sifted through the initial bids and identified three well-qualified, viable, capable audit firms. And these are the firms you'll hear from today: Grant Thornton, Clifton Larson Allen, and Ide Bailey. So what have they bid on, and what exactly do these external auditors do? And while I'm sure each of these firms can explain much more eloquently than I can, in the spirit of just to provide some high-level framework, the firms presenting today are aiming to provide external audit services over four distinct areas. So number one is ENSHE's consolidated financial statement audit. So what does that mean? ENSHE's management prepares and owns their financial statements, and an external auditor performs procedures within certain standards and expresses an opinion on those statements as to whether or not they're presented fairly. Number two is ENSHE's uniform guidance audit. It's also known as the single audit, previously known as the A133 audit. Again, ENSHE management's responsible for being in compliance with statutes and regulations that apply to the system's major federal programs. So the external auditors would provide an opinion on the compliance over those programs and their related internal controls. So most commonly, student financial aid is thought of when you think about the scope of this review. Number three is the audits of both medical school practice plans. The practice plans related to the medical schools are set up as separate not-for-profit corporations. So it's a separate audit in an industry with different significant risks to understand, processes to walk through, et cetera. So it requires a different kind of expertise. And number four, finally, agreed upon procedures for the two NCAA institutions. So NCAA member institutions are required to submit financial data detailing operating revenues and expenses related to intercollegiate athletics programs annually. So that date is subject to what's known as agreed upon procedures, which is different than giving an audit opinion, but essentially that must be performed by a qualified independent accountant. So historically our external auditors provide this service as well. So tying this all together, one of the duties of this committee is to recommend to the board independent certified public accountants to audit the financial books and records of the Nevada System of Higher Education and review and evaluate those reports. So if all goes well, that's exactly what will happen here today. Chair Carter, that concludes my remarks. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Sunbury? Seeing none, let's go on to item three, and our first up will be Grant Thornton. Yes, please. And for the record, would you just state your name, please?
Kim McCormick with Grant Thornton. There we go. That's better. Thank you for having us here today. I recognize some faces here. Good to see you all. For those of you new to the committee, it's nice to meet you. Those of you new to the management team, nice to meet you as well, and thank you for inviting us here today to present our proposal to conduct audit services for Nevada System of Higher Education. I have to tell you, I happen to serve on an audit committee too, and in all fairness, it was fun for me to be on that side of the table for a change. And my colleagues have heard me tell this story before, but we went through a process fairly similar to what you're going to go through today. We interviewed three different firms. We listened to their credentials. And as interesting as it was, by the end of the 3 hours and hearing the three firms, my mind was swimming. I'd heard a lot of data. It was hard to distinguish who said what. And I found myself having to take a step back and say, you know, in the end, what really matters to me as an audit committee member as I make this important decision? And there were three things. One, the capabilities of the firm, the quality of the work they do, that was absolutely critical. Number two, do I like these folks? Are these people who would be easy to work with? Can I get along with them? And if yes, number three, can they help me? So it's within that context that we've pulled together our presentation today and this particular team, because that is our goal, to continue to be good quality auditors, to be people who are easy to work with and above and beyond be helpful to this organization. So with that, I'd actually like to start, before we talk about us, to talk about you. And I want to acknowledge the five goals that are in your strategic plan right now. And as auditors, it's very important to think about what we do in the context of what you do. And while our ability to impact it sometimes is indirect and sometimes it is direct, understanding your goals makes us do a better job of being helpful. One of the goals that you've outlined is ramping up the research here in the organization and aspiring to be an R1 status organization in terms of your research profile. And that's a good example of something we do touch and we can touch and can be helpful. As Joe Sunbury mentioned, a big part of the audit is actually the single audit, the compliance audit, where we touch your research and development expenditures, the $120 million of expenditures, making sure that you're complying with the rules, that the internal control structure is strong, and that's just so fundamental to your future growth. And thinking about your internal desire to have future growth, you know, engaging in business discussions about what that growth means, and that's something that Mark will address a little bit more in our presentation. So I'm just so pleased to have what I think is the right team here to be helpful. And I would like to introduce my colleagues. I briefly introduce myself, Kim McCormick. I'm a 30-year veteran of Grant Thornton. I've been the client service partner for Nevada over the term of the contract. I spent 100% of my time working in higher education and the public sector, and one of my subspecialties, if you will, is the uniform guidance audits, and I'm a leader not only nationally in our firm but nationally among all firms, making sure that our profession does good quality single audits and is helpful to our clients in understanding their compliance responsibilities. With me today is Mark Oster. Mark is our national managing partner in terms of all higher education, not-for-profit, and public sector work. Mark is a veteran of the firm even longer than I am, and we look forward to hearing from Mark later in the presentation. Also with me today is Elise Parker. Elise and I have worked together for Elise's full career. She is a senior manager and is designated to be the lead senior manager for the INSHE engagement. Elise excels in working with big, complex, decentralized organizations and has selected higher education as her major, her industry specialty. One of the smiling faces you'll see on our slide is Chris Atkinson. Chris is here in spirit, and he sends his best wishes. His wife is having surgery today, so obviously that's where he is. But, you know, Chris is an interesting talent. He also works solely in our higher education practice. But he also had an opportunity to leave public accounting, work in a university as the assistant vice president of finance before he came back to public accounting. So his skill set is a broad one in that regard. And then leading the team on our healthcare side is Steve DiGuardi, also with 12 years experience working both in higher education and healthcare, and importantly, where the two meet. And so all of our team members look forward to sharing some information with you today. You know, as I pulled together this team, our approach was really to reach out to the firm to find the best people to continue to serve this important organization. And I'm thrilled to have pulled together this good, fresh set of eyes, this core team. This team is leading a group of roughly 25 to 30 auditors. That's what it takes to get all these audits done. And this next slide gives you a visual of where we land in our organization chart. It's a really a good mix of recurring team members and new fresh sets of eyes. We're roughly part of roughly 1,000 professionals here in our most western offices in 13 offices. 58 offices in the firm as a whole, and in 8,000 professionals. And so as a national firm, we have the luxury of having the reach and the depth that goes with that. But frankly, right here in our team, we have that reach and depth as well. And so I'm so happy to have these team members here with me today. So I'd like to tee up our agenda. In our cover letter to our proposal, we had five key issues that we thought would be important to bring to you as the audit committee, and these are really driving the comments that we'll be making throughout our presentation. The first is the optimal balance of the deep familiarity we have with the system and the practice plans by serving as your auditor in the past, and this fresh set of eyes to not be complacent, to think about making the audit better and the experience for you, our client, all the more robust. Our commitment to lead with quality as a firm, quality in our audit approach, and also quality in our service approach. Back to my original comments, we want to be helpful. Our strategic focus in higher education and healthcare, and specifically how that manifests itself in the depth of the team, our approach and our ability to add value to the system, and the fair and reliable estimate of your investment in us, having the comfort and confidence that we understand the scope of this big project, all 7,000 hours of it, the intricacies, the timing, and ultimately meeting the deadline to present back to this committee in early December each year. And finally, our commitment to NCHI and to Nevada, a mutually beneficial relationship to support you and your goals and also Nevada's best interests. So with that, I've asked Elise to kick us off and focus on our point number one.
Thank you, Kim. I'm Elise Parker. I'm a senior manager with Grant Thornton, and I'm really excited to be taking on the role as the lead senior manager for this engagement, working with Kim and leading the financial statement and the compliance audits for under uniform guidance. This is exactly the type of audit engagement that I specialize in and really just enjoy. As Kim mentioned, my specialty is in working with large, complex, decentralized organizations, and that's fun for me. It requires a lot of collaboration, a lot of coordination amongst the team, and really tailoring our approach to get it right for you. I don't like to apply a one-size-fits-all audit approach. It just doesn't work, especially for an organization with your level of complexity. And as Kim mentioned as well, my specialty is in higher ed, so that's the other reason that I'm so excited to be here. I've had the pleasure to work with Kim for my entire career, and I've seen firsthand how her being the constant in the client relationship is so critical, all while developing the team below her and ensuring that the audit approach is appropriate, just as she's demonstrated here in the last 10 years. I know I speak for Stephen, Chris, myself, and the rest of our team in saying that we're excited to take advantage of Kim's deep familiarity with the organization and also bringing a fresh set of eyes and our very hands-on approach to the audit and the opportunity to really work side by side with you in delivering really excellent client service. And we've already taken a good amount of time and to be able to hit the ground running. You know that first meeting with the controllers is generally in March, and Stephen and Chris and I have all spent time with your financial statements, with our past audit files, understanding the approach, so we're really ready. I know for all of you and the management team members in the room, quality is really critical. As an audit committee, you're responsible for managing risk. As a management team, you want really good, candid feedback and a fair assessment of your results and your controls. And it's really important for your external users, such as lenders and the federal government, funders, and other stakeholders of NCHI, to have really high quality results. As important as quality is, it's also really difficult to measure. So this slide demonstrates for you one of the key external measures that we have of our quality, and that's our rate of audit deficiencies as measured by the PCAOB, who are the regulators of our industry. So this graphic demonstrates us as being in the top two of the lowest rate of deficiencies based on PCAOB regulatory reviews. This chart being at the bottom is the best, and that downward curve that you see is a demonstration of our continuous improvement. We're really, really proud of that. While the PCAOB stat relates to public company audits, ultimately this really trickles down into the rest of our organization and our approach to quality. And we don't want to imply in any way that the public company approach is what we would take for you or have taken for you, but we really just want it to demonstrate the importance of quality to our firm and the importance of continued improvement. We're also really proud to have been selected by three of our very large peers to conduct their peer reviews, which is another part of our industry's quality measurement. It's really a sign that our competitors recognize our reputation for quality. And our focus on quality really trickles throughout the organization. It's foundational for every single one of our team members, regardless of service line and regardless of location. We are very committed to continued improvement to very high quality results. You'll see that manifest itself through our investment in high quality and specialized training for our staff, our attraction and retention of top talent, our recognition of our teammates through a quality award program that we have, and continuous innovation, which is the next topic I'd like to speak on. So this is my favorite topic. I want to stress that innovation for us is much more than use of buzzwords. It's much more than theory. The idea of what it takes to execute an audit is changing very rapidly. And we're making significant investments as a firm in our resources to make those continuous improvements and get in front of that change, and then ultimately bring the results of that innovation to our clients. So we're putting it into action in our audits now. I've already been using some of these tools and techniques that are described on this slide on many of my audits, but I wanted to share a few examples of how this might impact INSHI specifically. Using data analytics in the areas of tuition and fee revenue can allow us to be very predictive in that testing. In student financial aid, it can allow us to identify anomalies in the population of aid or withdrawals and target our samples accordingly. For journal entry testing, which is a fraud test required by the audit standards, we can be much more targeted in the use of our whole ledger analytics program. And it's been really great to see the impact that has on our team and our discussions with our clients about anomalies or unusual trends in the population of adjustments. And then lastly, we can use our analytics, both numerical and textual, in supporting our testing of allowable costs for grants and our testing of operating expenses and in looking at grants and other contracts. So frankly, use of these tools is expected to decrease the total time it takes us to do an audit. We've outlined that in our proposal, and you'll see a meaningful reduction in our fees beginning in year three and continuing on through year five. So, you know, we're putting our money where our mouth is. We really do believe that this will help and that we'll be able to demonstrate that with you. So I'll turn it back to Kim and answer any additional questions in the Q&A.
Thank you very much, Elise. Kim McCormick, Grant Thornton. I want to stick with this theme of quality. Elise talked about quality in the context of the caliber of the work we do, but the other important part of quality is the quality of service and how we can work together side by side, shoulder by shoulder, and navigate through issues and be helpful. And so part of what we thought about as we pulled together this presentation is some examples of that over the years, and I'll just address a few of them. Joe Sunbury has some talented internal auditors in his group, and one of the risks that the audit committee historically has identified is the risk of the very intricate student financial aid program here at Nevada. There have been audit findings in that area in the past, and in order to help do some internal monitoring, Joe wanted to help his staff understand those intricacies. So we worked together and used one of his team members on our audit team under our supervision to help cross-train that person. It benefited the overall process and I think was very successful and something we'd be interested in continuing to do if that was something still of interest to the audit committee. Workday. This last year plus has been all about Workday here at Nevada System, and this last audit was the first time through getting some audit eyes on the implementation of Workday. One of the things that we realized early on is that we would benefit, and the audit would benefit, if we had a little Workday boot camp. So we arranged that with the Nevada staff and did a whole day of training, just understanding the cycles, understanding the processes, understanding the internal controls. And our audit team was part of that, but also our IT audit team. And everything we learned during that process benefited the audit process extremely, benefited our ability to document your new processes in our file and really serve as a framework for audits in the future. I think that was a great success. You know, because it was a big year and it was all about Workday, the audit timeline and the close of the books got impacted pretty significantly by getting used to that new system. I mentioned earlier this is a 7,000-hour ordeal, and roughly 3,000 of those hours got impacted by it taking INSHI a little bit longer to close the books for the year. But that was okay because we had the critical mass to be able to adapt to that and move those 3,000 hours and get them done in a little bit different time frame than when we originally anticipated, but still in time to meet the deadlines and meet your reporting requirements. And then our report out to you. Sometimes during audits, we have findings. We provide feedback. And I am very proud that we have been candid. We have been fair. We don't make issues any bigger or any smaller than they are. And you have our commitment that is part of our working relationship prospectively. And our commitment to be helpful continues, and Mark wanted to outline some of what we have in mind for the future.
Thanks, Kim. Mark Oster, Grant Thornton. I think we've set a Grant Thornton record for the longest I've ever been quiet in a meeting. So, but it's great to be before all of you. So in terms of what we want to do going forward, one of the commitments that we'd like to make is, we view this is a year-round relationship. It's not a transactional relationship, and it's about how do we bring more value to the system. And one of the ways is through sharing the experience and the learnings that we have and our insights with the committee and helping to raise the game a little bit. And, I've been with the firm for, it's coming up on 25 years, and have been working full-time with colleges, universities, and other nonprofits for nearly 17 years. So what I would like to commit is that I will personally be coming to make some presentations to the committee, to management, to the chancellor, and just very much part of our ongoing relationship, to talk about everything from good practices for an audit committee to board governance to growth in your research profile that Kim talked about in the beginning, or perhaps risk management. There are a whole host of topics, and I'll explain a little bit more of that in the slide to come. But really, we'll work collaboratively to figure out, what kind of ongoing education would you like? Can include the chancellor and direct reports and that sort of thing, and we'd be happy to provide that going forward. We've also, that's on top of what is already in the proposal, which is we've offered to provide CPE to the finance staff, and that's very much, again, part of our commitment to help. So continuing along, I'm here for a couple of reasons today. First, as the national managing partner, I'm here to say you have been and you would continue to be a very important client, not only of the practice and of the firm, and I wanted to personally be here to make that statement. I'm also here because I want to be able to describe to you a little bit, although you know us well, we've got some new committee members. I thought it would be good to do a quick recap in terms of our dedication and our commitment to this sector. I also lead our advisory services for higher education. So, I like to say I'm not an auditor, but I hang out with them a lot. And some of my best friends, even, I would say, are auditors. So I'm going to be sort of covering all of that. So first, in terms of the higher education sector, so Grant Thornton has designated certain industry groups as being national strategic industry sectors for the firm. Higher education is one of those. It's a very important part of what we do. And you can see a little bit about that on the stats on the left. We serve over 200 colleges and universities around the country, on the right, 200 colleges and universities around the country. We've got over 500 professionals who are dedicated to serving the space. Now, obviously, they're not all going to be working on this assignment, although it may feel that way at times. But the reason that that's important is that as much experience as you have here in front of the room, and this is the engagement team, not the sales team, it's great for you to know that we can tap into a network of professionals and clients around the country. I used to work with a partner years ago who used to say, it's great when you can learn from your mistakes, but it's even better when you can learn from someone else's mistakes, And so we can certainly share with you not only where other institutions have run into problems, but also best practices and techniques and the like. Now, numbers don't really tell the whole story. I've seen firms that will claim thousands of clients of various sorts. Our focus is on the middle and upper tier of the higher education space. So we are, you are a strategic fit to us as a large, multi-location research institution. Those are the kinds of clients we're serving. And not that there's anything wrong with, a lot of small government and college type environments, but it takes a different kind of talent, focus, resource to properly serve those institutions. Just a couple of things on that. We audit, from a higher education standpoint, more higher education institutions of significant size than all but one of the big four firms. And when it comes to the uniform guidance, as Joe laid out in the beginning, some firms will cite the number of audits they do in that space. I think for you, probably a more relevant statistic is the dollars audited, because that reflects, again, that comes back to reflecting size. And from a federal award dollar standpoint, we do more than all but two of the big four firms. So this is, again, very much in our wheelhouse, a very strategic core to our practice. And the last thing I want to say from an industry standpoint is, and you know, you've got this in our proposal, and hopefully this comes across, I very much believe that, you know, I can stand at a podium and proclaim ourselves to be a leader in the sector. You have to act like one if you're going to be serving mission-driven organizations, and that means finding ways to give back to the community we serve. And we are very focused on our commitment to giving back. We have been the highest level sponsor at NACUBO, which is the industry association for finance professionals in higher education, as well as their regional SACUBO, KAKUBO, WAKUBO, et cetera. So we do it with our dollars. We do it through our speakers. We are always speaking at these events. And, you know, yes, there is some amount of brand recognition we get from that, but I would like to think that, you know, when we have a number of speakers at a conference, we're giving more than we're getting, and that's how it should be. And we do that through our thought leadership, things like, hopefully you're familiar with our State of Higher Education report and our webcast series. You know, we're doing 6 webinars this year open to anyone in the higher ed space. The webinars and the report very much geared toward trustees as well as to members of management. And it's great if this is one's only touch point in higher education, it's a great way to get a finger on the pulse for what's happening in the sector and the issues that are important there. So with that, I'm going to let Steve tell you a little bit about our health system experience.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Steve Diaguardi. I'm a senior manager with Grant Thornton, and I'm really excited for the opportunity to be working with Enshi on the healthcare component of the audit. I come to the team with about 12 years of experience in external audits, as well as several years of advisory and corporate compliance services that I've provided in my past. And most of that, my experiences are focused on organizations within the healthcare and higher education space, as well as organizations in the public sector similar to your organization. I look forward to bringing my experiences to the team to help provide a fresh perspective and also provide value to the organization as we progress through the audit and build on the audits that we have performed in the past. I want to spend a little bit of time talking about our healthcare practice. So our healthcare practice at Grant Thornton is a continually growing practice, and it's becoming more and more robust as the years have gone on. And Grant Thornton has an express commitment towards that industry as a whole. Currently, we have a deep portfolio of healthcare organizations that we audit, as well as provide advisory services towards. Those organizations are led with healthcare systems, academic medical centers, as well as physician practices, many of which are public sector organizations that report under the government auditing and accounting standards similar to your organization. So we have a lot of experience is working with organizations with your complexity, your size, and as well as under the requirements that are applicable to you. In addition, we have dedicated team members that focus primarily on healthcare audits and healthcare audit engagements. We currently have about 650 dedicated professionals. So we have individuals from, you know, the early stages in their career who have elected healthcare as a major, so to speak, and they've been provided with very specific detailed training to help them understand the complexities of healthcare organizations, and as well as understand how those healthcare organizations integrate with you know, the greater environment, such as, you know, in your situation, higher education. But healthcare is integrated to all various parts of our economy, and it's just a great example of how we have a focus on that healthcare aspect. So, you know, with that, we're very happy, and we're pleased to be able to bring to you our extensive experiences within the healthcare space that we could provide towards the healthcare component of your organization. Thank you.
So, Mark Oster, Grant Thornton. So I'm going to take you through each of the bullets. No, I'm not really going to do that. I just wanted to very quickly explain to you a real differentiator for Grant Thornton is our advisory capability for higher education. And the reason that this is important is this reflects expertise resident within the firm that's available to the system obviously we can do projects, but I'm really talking about this in terms of cup of coffee conversations. If the committee, coming back to what I said also about offering to present, we can present on these topics, we can consult with management on the topics. There are four areas that are done by dedicated higher education specialists, these four: strategy and governance, operations improvement, information technology and risk. And just based on some things that we know about the system already, certainly things like helping with shared services under operations improvement, or the cost and revenue modeling, or the facilitated workshops under governance, I think there are a lot of opportunities as we go forward to tap into this firm expertise. These next four areas are areas where that are part of our consulting practice, but they're delivered by delivery specialists. They're sort of industry agnostic, but we can marry them up with our higher ed specialists when, you know, fortunately this is not going to be the case for you, but if there's a distressed institution, we'll take our turnaround and restructuring guys and marry them up with our higher ed professionals. And the same thing if there's M&A or if there's, hopefully, forensics, won't be the case. And certainly human capital services, I think, is another area of shared interest. So moving along.
We have about one more minute.
Okay.
Should I take this?
Okay. So I serve on two audit committees. I chair one. I'm not trying to compete here. But I know as a chair myself, one of the key responsibilities that this committee, that any committee has, is, and for management too, of course, is to manage and where possible avoid risk and institutional risk to the organization. And I think, you know, when you're thinking about what to do in this relationship decision, as Kim mentioned, you know, by going with a firm like Grant Thornton, there's certainly no firm that knows you better given the years of experience we have. We know your people, your operations, your technology, your culture, your goals. You know, in working with Grant Thornton, what we've been able to deliver in terms of responsiveness, in terms of partner and manager time, in terms of our insights, the quality, the rapport, the priority that you would be as a client. And this is a very important decision for you. You know what you're getting with Grant Thornton.
Thank you so much. Do we have any questions from members of the committee? I'll start us off if nobody. Oh, there we go. Regent Perkins.
At the end of the presentation, it said that you recruit students from University of Nevada, Reno. What about UNLV?
We are happy to do so. and we have a real, you know, to that point, I think it's a very important point. Recruiting is one element of our commitment not only to the system, but to the state. You know, we have over 100 clients in Nevada. We have over 70 employees who are working on Grant Thornton clients here in the state. We continue to want to grow and build that practice, and we're going to need talented students to help us do that. And so that's, you know, that's a perfect question to be asking about how we can partner together and demonstrate commitment to the space.
Regent Hayes.
So as you pointed out, and we all know you've been with us for about 10 years now, but you talked about you're adding some new members to the team. We know what we've had in the past. What can we expect is a big difference? What would you do better, I guess, in the future, or different? I don't know, better may not be the right word. What's kind of the key?
No, I hear the question. Kim McCormick, Grant Thornton, you know, part of what this opportunity to repropose has done is given us a new opportunity to think about bringing the best team. And so I have had a great team working with me over the past, but they aren't all higher education and healthcare specialists. So this was an opportunity for me to supplement that team. So bringing that additional depth is something new. Continuing the quality, continuing the being helpful, and thinking about other ways to be helpful, like what Mark outlined here, the having the business conversations about growth and other, you know, topics of interest with this committee. I hope that's something that you will find helpful and can take advantage of, because I think it's part of where we can really add value.
I see on your website you mentioned you have an office in Reno, but it looks like the only auditor up there does more private companies and not government or higher ed or healthcare. How important is it to actually have people on the ground in the state where you're doing it versus it seems like most of the people on this team are going to be coming from out of state?
We have a team that's primarily sourced from our West Coast offices, and frankly, that's how we've served Nevada system for years. It's very much a part of our model, and having those 900 to 1,000 professionals here in the West enables us to do that and to do that with flexibility. Frankly, it's just part of our business model. We're accustomed to going where our clients are and focusing more on bringing the right team versus the team who's the closest.
What else? Thanks, good. Thank you.
And Regent Hayes asked what I was going to ask. Is there any other questions from the board? Yep, Regent Perkins.
Thank you. I noticed on the current contract it said that you mentioned that the price was going to go down. Will that sacrifice in quality? And how does it go down? And why does it go down? The more years that we commit to you.
Yeah, well, as Elise very eloquently articulated, the audit world is changing and at a very fast pace, and the tools and the technology available to us today weren't even available a year ago. And so that fast pace of change and how our audit approach changes is going to result in actually better quality audits and being able to use automation for certain steps that reduce the hours. So we think the insights that are going to come out of that are going to be very interesting. And a byproduct is that the whole process will happen faster, and we're very happy to pass those savings along to you.
And if I can just, Mark Oster from Grant Thornton, just to add on to that great question. So, you know, we have actually made a tremendous, we've hired folks from IBM and other tech firms to bring artificial intelligence and other technologies into the firm. And so it's kind of interesting that the price goes down and the effort goes down, but the quality goes up. And it's something that we feel that by putting this into our price quote, this is not just something we're promising for down the road. We actually believe that we're going to be able to apply those technologies. And again, from what's important to the committee, why does it, aside from price, of course, is quality translates to risk reduction, right? So if we can look at the audit transactions that we're looking at, and instead of sampling according to industry standards, we can look at every single transaction through the use of technology, we're going to be able to find things that even with the best sampling methodology, we might not find. By using data visualization tools where, you know, you can do these scatter things and all of a sudden you find these transactions that are like outliers on the graph, you can say, what are those? You know, you might not find those if you're only sampling. So this is really, in terms of protecting the institution, a firm with the size of ours who can hire these experts and develop this technology really makes a difference to you. And then, of course, the other thing is we can transfer some of that to you guys. As we deploy these tools, these are things that you can use not just when Grant Thornton is here. So, yeah.
Any other, Regent DelCarlo?
Thank you. That's just a follow-up to the analytics, which is fairly new. So where are you in there with the analytics, the artificial intelligence? Are you like a 10%, 50%? Because, I mean...
We got people clawing for the microphone.
Okay.
I love this. Okay. Again, Elise Parker, Senior Manager with Grant Thornton. So the first time that I love to pilot these things. The first time I piloted it was actually 2 years ago. Two audit cycles ago. So now I'm in third audit cycles on this tool. It's been released to our entire firm and is being very actively used. So some of the things, the way we've got that slide laid out for you kind of shows where we are today, what we anticipate in the very near future, and what's a little further out. And that's kind of why that price quote doesn't drop tomorrow. But the data analytics, the kind of core numerical analysis and linguistic analysis, I'm using today on engagements, and I'm excited to bring it to NG for this next audit cycle. There's a little bit of time to ramp up to it, but we'll be able to use it in this cycle. And it's really fun.
Any other questions? Just of note, thank you so much for using our internal audit team that's helped reduce our costs in the past and for including that in your estimate going forward. So thank you very much. And we'll take a couple seconds here and switch out groups here. Jill Sile.
All right, our pleasure. Thank you all. Thank you.
Next group is Clifton Lawson Allen. You'll have about 30 minutes. Feel free to use all of it, but if you want to be a little early, that's great too. And I'll let you know when you have about a minute left.
It has a delay. Push it and then wait a beat, and then it'll come on.
And if you would just state your name just for the record as you talk. Thanks.
Definitely. I think there we go. The delay, like you said. We'll start off with introductions, if that's okay, and then we'll jump into the presentation. Good morning, everyone. My name is Jean Bouchong. I am a principal with Clifton Larson Allen. I actually lead our National Higher Education Public Institution Practice.
My name is Bill LeClaire. I'm a leader in our national practice for higher education, and my job here today is to make sure that I commit to you that we would bring the appropriate resources to be able to serve the Nevada system of higher education.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Darren McGarvey. I'm a principal, and I lead our healthcare practice for CLA.
Good morning. I'm Caroline Boyer. I'm a manager and the chief quality officer for our information security group.
Dave Rubidek. I'm a principal in our higher education group.
Brenda Scher, I'm the National Director of Student Financial Aid.
Daniel Prasad, Manager within our higher education
group. All right, thank you, everyone. Thank you so much for allowing us to speak to you today. For those following along in the presentation, we are on slide 3. What we want to do today is first start and talk a little bit about who Clifton Larson Allen is, but then we really want to dive into three core principles of why we want to serve your system. But let's talk a little bit about CLA first. They're on slide 3. Most of you probably know, but we are a top 10 national firm with over 100 offices across the country. We do have 2 offices here in Nevada, and we'll talk a lot about that today, with over 40 employees in each one of those locations. The one unique piece about CLA at being a top 10 firm is we are the only top 10 firm that leads by serving the public sector. And you may be asking, okay, what's the public sector? That's government, nonprofits, and higher education institutions. So whereas other top 10 firms are really leading, serving, and their biggest industries are those SEC corporations, our biggest organizations are organizations just like you. So we want to serve organizations such as the system. We have over 5,000 employees across the nation, again, about 80 here in the state, and we lead with industry specialization. So what does that mean? That means obviously the people that come in and serve the system know higher education, and they're passionate about higher education because we want people to be passionate about what they work on so that they'll stay and build careers here at CLA. All right, so that's enough about CLA. Let's move and talk about CLA in the system and why we think we would be a great fit to serve you, okay? So moving along to slide 4, we think there's 3 core principles that we want to really emphasize over the next half hour or so and talk that we really want to drive home. We know that the other firms here today are capable firms. We know that. They would not be here if they were not. And so we know that all 3 firms talking to you today can issue an audit under auditing standards, right? So what's different about a CLA? How can we differentiate CLA to you in 20 minutes? And that's what we're going to try to do, right? So first of all, down at the left-hand point there, our team members, okay? Our team members are passionate about a higher education. They're trained in higher education. And we're going to bring a mix of national higher education specialists combined with our local resources to make sure you get the best experience, the best professional services possible. Up at the top, we talk a little bit about experience. We have served over 10 different state higher education systems across the country. In a little bit, Dave is going to talk about that experience and how we know how we can come in and provide a high-quality product to you beyond just the audit. We want to provide value, right? We want this to be more than just the compliance process of coming in and checking the boxes. Because of that experience that we have with public institutions across the country, we can provide cybersecurity best practices. We can provide other best operational practices to your organization that we see across the country because our eyes and our minds touch this on a daily basis. This is who we serve. And then the last bucket is that service piece. You know, what differentiates CLA service compared to everyone else. Again, it is linked to that experience that I just talked about because we serve other state higher education systems. But we know the cost pressures on higher education. We know the revenue constraints while our costs continue to grow. How can higher education sustain that process? We know those pressures. And so we can't come to you every time there's a new auditing standard or a new GASB standard and say, hey guys, we need some more fees. We've got this GASB standard. No, we, just like your institutions, have to become more efficient. We have to become, but yet remain providing a quality product. And so we have implemented our audit innovation process to ensure that we're still, your management's gonna leave after working with us saying, hey, we just received a quality audit. These people know higher education through our audit innovation process. So those are the three core principles we hope to drive home today. And with that, I'll turn it over to Bill.
One of the most important things whenever you're in a relationship, whether it's a business relationship or otherwise, is communication. One of the keys to communication is listening. And we want to make sure that we listen to our clients, we listen to what they have to say. And so it's an important piece. And so we've talked to our clients and prospects, and we said, you know, when you're working with a national firm, with you know, one of the big four or the largest firms in the country, what is it that you like about working with those types of firms? And what they've told us some of the positives are is, first of all, name recognition. They like the fact that they're working with a firm that is recognized throughout the country and that other people will understand. And so name recognition is an important piece to them. They also think it's important, the national resources that these firms bring to them, the resources that they have, you know, if difficult issues come up or if there's specific staffing issues or anything else. They like the fact that these firms have national resources that can assist in that audit process. We said, what is it about working with a firm like that you don't like as much? And they said, well, a lot of times the service and timing will lag somewhat because we feel like we're not the most important client to them. Their focus is often on SEC type clients and not on clients that are just in the public sector or clients that are working on as some filler work for the rest of the year. And so first of all, I want to stop and for a moment and to assure you that the Nevada System of Higher Education would be a very important client to CLA. And we would make sure, and I'm here to commit to you, that you would get our top resources and that you would be treated as a very top client. One of the things also with the service and timing is that sometimes they're worried about, you know, whether things, you know, that we have the time frame first and foremost. We want to make sure we communicate that. I talked about communication, that we're always there and we're talking to you about the time frames and making sure that we're meeting any deadlines that you have. Another issue that they're talking about working with national firms is that the staff with higher education, sometimes it's going to be their minor. It's not going to be their major focus. At CLA, as Gene talked about, we have people that are dedicated to this industry. This is what we do. Everybody here is concentrated in higher education. And sometimes these other firms will bring people, and they may have a state and local government client, or maybe they have one higher education client they work with. But that's something that we can do a little bit better on than that. And the partner manager involvement, sometimes they don't get as much time frame as what they're talking about when they're working with these national firms. They may not get of the highest level people on the engagement, they may not get all the time that they need. So then we said, okay, let's talk to our clients that work with regional firms. You know, what are some of the things they liked about working with regional firms? And some of the positive is that they're an important client to them. They get timely service. They also feel like they get local people working on the jobs, and so they feel that that's an important thing as well. Some of the negatives they talked about is they have a lack of national higher education resources, and they sometimes may not be following along with what the trends are nationally or what some of the issues are, or they may have turnover issues and have a difficult time replacing those people. And so that's been one of the complaints that some of these clients have talked about. As far as thought leadership, you know, they think that that's sometimes lacking in best practices. Not working with similar type clients doesn't allow them to bring different things to the table and different types of examples. And the partner manager involvement, sometimes the partner manager can't focus as much because of the demands that are on their time from their other type of clients that they have going on with them as well. So then we said, all right, well, clients, tell us about us. What is it that you think about us? And they said, well, first of all, your involvement in higher education, whether it be within the Kubo events or the Department of Ed, you do have name recognition. In higher education, you're one of the best-known names in the country as far as serving those types of clients. You have national resources, which is able to be able to talk about, to bring that depth to the team, to be able to bring the best resources there. Our state system experience, I believe, is second to none across the country. We have a lot of different things that we can bring as far as best practices and working with similar type organizations. Our principal and manager involvement, they like the fact that they get to talk to us, and we've measured that. As of course, we're a CPA firm, we measure everything. And so we look at that and we said about 30% of our time comes from our top-level people that work on these engagements. We have team members, as I talked about before, that know higher education. You know, everybody here is versed in higher education. Your whole team members would be people that are on higher education. And we bring a lot of thought leadership resources. You know, for example, several state systems have asked us to come in and to do a one-day training for their staff, whether it be to assist them in getting their CPE requirements, or perhaps it's in learning what the new standards are coming in, how we're going to deal with them, those types of things. But that's another thing that we're able to offer because of the expertise that we have in all those things. And to further talk about our experience, I'd like to turn it over to Dave.
Yeah, thanks, Bill. Because we specialize by industry, the folks here at the table have grown up working in higher education. It's something that we spend a majority of our time, if not all of our time, working on. So we have various clients in that space. Below on this page, we've listed a sample of those. These aren't all of our state systems, but we've listed those here. And every single member that you see here works on one or more of these clients. So so we do have that background. And because we audit so many, and we do cross-pollinate across the country and regionally, we do believe we think we know what it takes to deliver a quality audit and value. And I think that's resonated, and that resonates within the industry, and I think you'll see that in our client list. And then because we have the experience with the state systems across the country, we've become very accustomed to integrating some of the nuances that come with an organization the size, including research and development, as well as the university healthcare piece. And with that, I'll turn it over to Darren to talk a little bit about the healthcare component. Yeah.
Thanks, Dave. And I have the great fortune of leading the healthcare components of the universities listed below there. And, you know, I think one of the things that, you know, really resonates in the marketplace is the ability to have CLA have a really integrated, seamless approach between all the different components that we come in and audit. And Bill talked about everyone having a higher education experience. I have to admit, I am a healthcare person, first and foremost. That's where I spent all of my time every single day. And with the complex rules and regulations surrounding that industry, we have to have a dedicated team that understands that. And so very similar to the higher education team, you know, you have a passionate, experienced team of healthcare individuals. They spent all of their time working in healthcare organizations, and many of the people on the team would actually have that academic medicine experience as well to work on those university healthcare organizations listed below. We have the industry depth, which I'll talk about a little bit later, but we also have the coordination. And one thing that's really worked well for us when we have our healthcare component as a component of our higher education team is, and it sounds very simple, but we are very well coordinated. We have weekly internal calls to ensure every single team member is serving the client, serving you to the best of our abilities, making sure that we're on track, making sure that our timetables are going smoothly and according to plan, and just making sure that the team is truly doing that, functioning as a team. So we're very, very proud of the way that we've built that over the years, and we do feel that it's resonating in the marketplace. On slide 10, our healthcare experience, I won't read through this in depth, but you can see that we have a vast, vast healthcare practice here at CLA, over 8,700 clients. And so that's substantial. That, and not only serving in just one industry segment, we serve the continuum of care across healthcare. We think that that's relevant for organizations just like you, even though you may not have post-acute or a hospital or health system. Obviously, you have the family medicine and you have the multi-specialty plans, but those all integrate and talk to different hospitals, referrals, and what have you. Understanding the continuum of care and to be able to provide the value that we do is very, very important. We have over 400 people in our healthcare practice today that spend all of their time speaking, living, breathing, and sleeping healthcare each and every day. And so with that, I'll turn it over to Brenda to talk about single audit.
Thanks, Aaron. Slide 11, you'll see this slide really showcases CLA's experience with single audits. We do twice as many single audits than any other firm in the country, and you can see that on this slide. I also want to point out that CLA was recently awarded the Single Audit Resource Center Award. That award actually focuses on knowledge, value, and overall client satisfaction in single audits. If you move on to the next slide, slide 12, this showcases our student financial aid experience. We have over 560 audits clients that we deal with federal work study, 563 with Pell Grants. And we actually did a lot of work with our audit innovation and really looked at how do we do our audits and how can we streamline it. What we identified is that we pick up a piece of paper and we might pick up that same piece of paper four or five times. So we developed tools to really streamline our process. So we pick up that piece of paper, get all the information that we need, and then it links into other areas. And the OIG, the Department of Education, has actually looked at our work papers and we have praised our work really highly. So I'll actually turn it over to Daniel to talk about technology.
Thanks, Brenda. As a firm, given the various audits that we do, we work year over year to come up with innovation within our audit procedures so that we can come up with an effective and also an efficient audit. And by doing this, we incorporate some technological services to ensure that our audit is planned appropriately according to audit standards. So with that, I'll turn it over to Caroline to speak on the next slide in terms of how technology plays a part within our audit.
Thanks, Daniel. As part of our audit innovation, we integrate our IT specialists, like myself, into the audit team. We have a deep understanding of the unique IT environments within healthcare and higher education. So we use that experience to review your IT controls, and not only do we use that review to lessen the time that we need to spend on substantive testing, but we also make recommendations to improve your overall security environment. Because we don't want to just be your auditors. We want to provide value and really be your partner. So with that, if you'll go to slide 15, I'm going to pass it back to Daniel, and he's going to talk some more about other ways we'll provide value for you.
Thanks, Caroline. And given that we're an industry specialization firm, one of the things that we pride ourselves is being a thought leader within the higher education industry. And what does this mean is throughout the year, we do host free webcasts on various topics as relating to new standard implementation or higher ed trends. In fact, if you look at our website today, next week, Thursday, we do have our virtual higher education conference for which we'd like to invite the university to attend. You can attend virtually from your office. Additionally, throughout our higher education group, we do have individuals that work on speaking engagements, whether it be with the AICPA or Nakubo, and also partner with them. In fact, within our team today, Brenda Scherer is currently working with the AICPA and the Department of Education as it relates to some student financial aid technical assistance. And then Jean Bouchon is working with Nakubo on implementation of GASB 84. Mm-hmm. So with that, our clients and our team is educated and can bring best practices and recommendations to our clients. So with that, I'll turn it over to Dave Rabidek to talk a bit of our team members.
Team's important, and audit team continuity is as well. And one of the drivers of audit team continuity is staff retention rates. And you'll see on this slide here that the data speaks for itself. And we also calculate this retention rate by industry. And last year, our higher education industry had 94% retention rate. So we're something we're proud of. Page 17, a lot of these points we've already covered, but what our clients tell us what really makes the difference on a day-to-day basis, that is our team, and that's why we're all here today. And how do we build our team quickly? We got to bring the expertise and experience, and we do consider geography, but not at the expense of the right experience and expertise. And then we do integrate local offices. We know we've all been connecting with both the Reno and Nevada offices, and the Las Vegas office. And Las Vegas in particular is very excited. A lot of alum there, a lot of graduates there. They've been keeping their pulse on how this is going. So a lot of excitement all the way around. With that, I'll turn it back over to Jean.
All right. So to wrap up our presentation before I turn it over to Q&A, I want to hit two points. First of all, on slide 18, the fear of transition. Oftentimes, our largest competition is that of the incumbent because management fears that transition. They think they're going to have to train us. They think they're going to have to spend additional time behind the scenes. And we know they're already strapped for time. And so what we want to relate to you is, hey, we have a transition plan. We have done this to multiple large university systems. I encourage you to call the state of Mississippi. We just transitioned those guys and it went fantastically. We don't ask management to recreate the wheel. We want to use the schedules that they already have, the forms they already have, the audit preparation they've already done. Sure, we're going to ask different questions, of course, But we're not going to make them have an additional workload. We're going to have a higher education team. You've heard that already, right? A couple of times. We're going to spend more time up front. Make sure we're prepared. Make sure we understand management's expectations on timing. All of that investment is on us. We're going to make sure that we do that, and we'll arrive prepared. I have 40 seconds to wrap this up, and so a couple of key points that I want to make sure that everybody heard today. Number one, we do feel that we're national leaders in higher education. We are involved in the KUBOS and the KUBOS AICPA, the Department of Education, National Science Foundation. We are involved in this industry. Quality is our number one focus. Your management is going to feel as if we delivered a high-quality audit using the technological tools that we provided. And lastly, we're going to be a team. Right? We're going to work together, but at the same time, maintaining our independence, but providing the collaborative experience to make sure you get the best quality product possible. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, and thank you for being even less on time than we allotted. So, questions from the board? I'm happy to start us out. You want me to start?
Couple of questions. You touched on it briefly about having the national expertise as well as the locals, and that the local office is excited about this.
Yeah.
How important is it to have people located here versus having the national experts?
Go ahead, Gene.
Anybody can answer it. I mean, okay.
The way that we, first of all, we want to know your expectations, of course, but the way we typically serve our state systems is to, number one, make sure you have the expertise to serve someone your size. You have many regulations, you have many risks, you have many things, you're decentralized, numerous organizations, so you have to have someone experienced in performing a state system office. So we lead with that. Then obviously, we utilize team members from the local resources, supplemented with those national specialists. If you look, for example, can I give an example? Do I have time to give an example? For example, I lead the state of Oregon used to have a system. I don't know if you're aware, but it split into seven separate organizations. But I led that, and now I audit five of the seven universities. And I lead that from the Denver office, okay? I do the same for the Kansas because I have that understanding of the state systems. But we utilize staff from the Portland office. We utilize staff from the St. Louis office because that way we're bringing the expertise and the local presence. So we think it's the best of both worlds.
Thanks. The other question I had is, looking at the proposals, there's three of you coming for us today, and the other two estimated about 3,000 hours for the financial aid portion of the audit, and yours was about 900, so less than a third. I believe you talked about your methods of not having to look at the same financial aid documents four or five times. Is that the simple solution that saved a third of the time, or is there something I'm missing here?
First of all, thanks for the question. We're kind of hoping somebody was going to ask that and notice that, because we've done a couple of things. First of all, the breakdown between the different sections may be part of that, where we may be putting some time into the consolidated audit that other people may be coding to the single, to the uniform grant audit. However, beyond that, we have spent a large amount of time, Gene brought it up at the beginning, making sure that we are as efficient as possible. We know the pressures that other organizations are doing, and our clients are being asked to do it, and so we've spent the last 2 years in an audit innovation process. And as we're doing that, we're working with the Department of Ed to say, hey, this is what we're looking at, this is what we're doing, we're bringing in data analytics, we're looking at things different, less times, as Brenda talked about earlier, and we really got this process refined down. And we're comparing it. When we looked at your system and the amount of hours we're putting in, we're looking at the amount of hours, and we have that ability to compare because we do other state systems, and how many hours are we putting in on them, and what type of product are we getting, and what type of feedback are we getting from them. And so we're very proud of the work that we've done to be able to minimize the amount of time that we have to put into that area.
I'd like just to emphasize, really drive this home. That's exactly what we did. When we were putting together your estimated hours, of course, it's an estimate, right? We went to Mississippi, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, the systems that we do, and we went into our systems. We said, how many hours are we spending? Maybe we just code our time differently than other firms. So if you take the consolidated audit and that single audit and add those together, the discrepancy isn't quite as big.
I'd like to ask a follow-up. So I'm looking at page 37 of your guess this is the proposal.
Technical proposal.
There we go. So on the consolidated, we're about 2,700, and on that single audit that Regent Hayes was mentioning, it's 760. But if we look at UNLV Medicine, we're at 455. So in cumulative, this is about 3,000 hours less than what is previously taken in the past. So I heard your answer, but can you tell me anything else to make me think, wow, you know, you figured out 3,000 hours of savings?
I'll actually add something to that also. We actually take the time, we invest in our clients by training our staff. So we actually have like an SFA boot camp. Anybody that works on an SFA audit has to go through that training. And we actually ask some of our clients to provide actual student files so they can be training on that. So when they get out in the field, they're running. They hit the road running. They're not being trained. And your staff's not training them like on what is a Pell Grant. And that really helps our efficiency is having knowledgeable people come out onto the campuses.
And I would like to clarify, too, that single audit component includes all the federal programs that might come under an audit. And you know, if you look at 18, the university system had five major programs, which included research and development. So our fee estimate and hours estimate is specific in our cost proposal, and that it's for SFA in two programs. Research and development would fall in a different year, and you would find there's a big uptick in those hours in that year. We just presented the first year's hours. So I think, you know, that might explain some of that difference, because the majority of that 3,000 hours is in the single audit area.
So we do an analysis of what your major programs are going to be in the next year. It's not going to be, last year may have been five, six programs. Next year we estimated three based upon your risk profile and the findings that you had. And so the hours are going to change year to year based upon your major programs. And so our hours estimate was based upon three major programs. That obviously would go up if someone's assuming five or seven. And so we tried to outline that in our proposal saying this is based upon three. Does that help?
And we do increase the hours. And in the year three, we also show that when we anticipate that's going to happen.
I can certainly address the healthcare component if you'd like as well. If the answer is satisfactory, I don't need to, but if you'd like me to, I could.
I just have a point of clarification, Mr. Sundari, if this is appropriate, is do we typically just have a few areas that we do every year when we rotate between those areas? Could you just clarify for us?
Sure. Joe Sundari for the record. It will vary year to year. Each, you know, external audit firms have a certain analysis that they do to determine what's considered a major program, and that number will vary. As they noted, because it's public information, there were five major programs this year. I think the year before that there were three. So it is appropriate in their bid, if you will, to anticipate a certain number.
Okay.
Thanks.
Also, in the, I don't remember what page it's on, but we do, in the past, we've used the internal audit team. They're pretty robust to help cut a little bit of cost and kind of help you guys out. And so I appreciate that was also included as a possibility in there.
Yes.
Other questions from board members? Regent DiCarlo, please.
Thank you, Chair Carter. Can you touch a little bit more on technology? Because it's changing so rapidly, and what is your firm investing in and see as the future going forward?
Absolutely, I can take that one. So we have a huge amount of resources developed to technology, not only addressing the risks that come with that technology, but also the ever-changing environment and what technology we can put in place to make the audit process more innovative and more effective and efficient. So we're constantly looking at this, and even internally, we're making sure that we're aware of the risk, because not only are you at risk, but we're at risk because we have all of your data. So we give you guys the recommendations because we already have them in place. We know what's going on, and we present at some of the largest conferences for healthcare and just information security altogether. We were at HIMSS last week. So, I mean, we really take it seriously. All these guys can attest. I think if it's not like every 2 weeks, it's certainly monthly that we send out internal phishing emails. And I'm sure a few of these guys have clicked on the link one or two times. Mm-hmm. But we take it very seriously, and we're constantly changing things up so we can keep our pulse on what the new threats are.
When we present to boards, we tell there we end our presentations on higher education industry trends and what are the risks facing you. And for the past several years, the number one risk that we're providing is cybersecurity risk. And so when our IT specialists are in here, not only are we looking at your IT GCs, we're making sure you're up to par on the high the industry trends. Are your passwords complex enough? You know, we'll even propose, hey, we can come in and do what's it called, penetration testing, et cetera. So it is high, high on our radars.
And this is Daniel. I don't know if I have time to speak on the audit side of it. Jean mentioned that we work on audit innovation, but throughout our auditing process too, we do look at various softwares that can help us as we go about our audit to help reduce some of the substantive testing by looking at your general ledger detail and then breaking it down to look at anomalies and various items that potentially can help us during our planning processes so that once we get into the field work, we can plan accordingly and focus on the risk areas to ensure that we're providing a quality audit to you.
Question about healthcare. So the management team is experienced. Is the team that you send to the medical schools also fielded with medical experience or just audit experience?
100%, yes. We're very industry driven. Thanks for the question. And so every single person from associate up to the principal level focuses 100% of their time in the healthcare space. Absolutely.
Any more questions from the board? Regent DeCarlo.
Thank you, Regent Carter. The PCAOB, I guess, gives a quality is a huge word in this area of the world. And what is your lowest rate of audit deficiencies? Do you know that one?
So let me just start by saying this, and maybe Bill jump in after me. The PCAOB is primarily focused on the audit of public companies, SEC companies. If you recall, when I first introduced, started talking, that's not a focus of ours, okay? Now, we do some credit unions and a few small clients subject to the PCAOB reviews, and my understanding is those, what, five?
Yeah, we have a few practices in our financial institution group, but to answer your question more succinctly is that we are a member of the PCAOB Oversight Board, so I guess that's redundant. OB is Oversight Board. But we have not received any letters of comment from them. Same thing with our peer review. We have the highest level of rating that we can get from them.
Any more questions? Well, thank you so much, CLA. thank you so much for presenting to us today.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. And I apologize. I did have surgery earlier this week, so if I mumbled, I do apologize. Yeah.
We'll wait a couple seconds here until Edette Bailey comes in. Well, welcome. You have 30 minutes. When we get to about 1 minute, I'll let you know. Feel free to use all 30, or if you end early, that would be fantastic. And just make sure you state your name for the record. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Good morning. Thank you very much for the opportunity to present today. For the record, Dan Carter. I'm a partner with Ide Bailey. With me today are Tammy Miramontes, Renee Gravelin, Anders Erickson, and Jody Doherty. We're all partners or principals with Ide Bailey. We are the four primary partners that were included in the proposal that was provided to you guys. Jody Doherty is actually our Director of Government Services for the firm, and so we'll each take a little piece of the presentation this morning. I believe everyone has been provided a copy of our proposal along with our couple-page fact sheet. What we'd like to do with our time this morning is to point out a few differences between our firm and the other finalists that have spoken to you guys today. I'd like to start by saying while the key expertise of the partner level that's represented here today come from various offices in the firm, The vast majority of the people and time spent working on the audit will be from our local Nevada offices. Some firms have, or say they have, local offices, but the staff included in the proposals all are traveling in from other states. Other firms say that they've got people in our state, but there aren't necessarily offices to support those people in the primary markets. Hyde Bailey is truly the only firm that can say we have offices where the system has campuses. We plan to utilize Reno, Las Vegas, and Elko staff to get these jobs done. This helps support local economies in which we all live and work and provides jobs for future system graduates. It also provides us a distinct advantage of being able to be present for important meetings within minutes. If a sensitive issue arises, sometimes it's best to discuss that issue face-to-face, and we can be here. It took us about 20 minutes to get here from our Las Vegas office today. Our Reno office is about 15 minutes from the system offices up north. So Tammy and I have are both Nevada natives and system alumni. We've spent our entire careers working on Nevada governmental entities, including some of the largest in the state throughout that time. We're the dominant Nevada firm in Nevada governmental auditing. As an example, the system's schedule of expenditures of federal awards represents about $500 million in expenditures annually. I've worked on the state of Nevada audit my entire career. It's about $5.6 billion in federal expenditures. So we've got the capacity and the capability to perform large governmental audits. A substantial portion of these audits would occur in southern Nevada, so I'd turn it over to Tammy to talk about the resources in our Las Vegas office.
Thank you very much. For the record, Tammy Miramontes. So we have been performing audits, government audits, in the Las Vegas area for over 20 years. I personally have been performing audits for over 20 years in the Las Vegas market. Some of our larger clients are Clark County, the Clark County School District, and McCarran Airport. And our relationship with the school district has been for 20 years now. In that capacity, they have almost $300 million in federal expenditures. And so we are auditing that single audit program, multiple programs annually, with about $300 million. And then the county itself has about another $130, $140 million. So again, very familiar with federal programs, the complexities, and the compliance requirements with those. And anything else? I mean, we have multiple, I guess in this market, besides those entities, we've had a variety of clients in Southern Nevada. The staffing here, additionally, we have 36 people in our office, and about 20 of those are auditors, and the majority of them have experience with governmental auditing.
Absolutely. Yeah, we do have partners, managers, and staff in Reno, Elko, and Las Vegas, all with governmental expertise. So at Bailey, we believe that healthcare entities should be handled by the healthcare experts. Renee Gravelin is one of those experts, so I'll turn it over to her to talk about that aspect.
All right, thank you. For the record, it's Renee Gravelin. I am not local to Nevada, but as Dan just mentioned, we do feel that it's important to bring in someone. As you mentioned earlier, those medical practice plans are different. They have different risks. They have different looks to them. And having someone who understands healthcare and the unique environment that healthcare facilities have is very important. We would utilize, however, Nevada staff on those. Simply, we've already done that. As was in the proposal, one of our large clients here in Nevada is Renown, and we utilize Reno staff generally on that one as well. So trying to get some of the healthcare expertise into the state, but I've worked in healthcare for 30 years. I started on my internship. I was assigned to a healthcare facility and loved the industry and have been practicing in it for 30 years. So I don't think I'm gonna leave until I retire. So it's something I'm very passionate about, the healthcare industry and understanding the uniqueness of the healthcare industry when you're dealing with third-party payers and government payers and insurance payers and things like that. It does add a level of complexity, as does the information technology system, because it becomes so imperative to make sure those things are secure, which Anders is going to talk about a little bit as well. but HIPAA compliance is a huge thing. We all just had to do another session on HIPAA compliance simply because as a healthcare firm or as one of our industries, we do have access to, you know, protected health information, so we need to make sure all of our staff are understanding that.
Thanks, Renee. Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about IT today. It's certainly an important issue. And I'd like Anders maybe to spend a little bit of time talking about why we feel our approach towards IT for the system makes the most sense.
Sure. My name is Anders Erickson. I'm the Director of Cybersecurity Services for Eide Bailly. I've been with Eide Bailly for about 6 years, and prior to that, I was with a national firm back in Washington, D.C., Go Nationals, and we happen to be a Bryce Harper fan who's a product of your fine institution, so I appreciate that and a little shout out there. But I've been with Eide Bailly, like I said, for about 6 years supporting financial statement audits. So all the audits they talked about, the government audits here in Nevada and throughout the firm's footprint, me and my team have been supporting them through testing and evaluation of IT systems and controls, making sure security's in place, and where they can rely on systems, we help them get to that point where the audit team recognizes where the risks are, recognizes the organization has met the thresholds necessary to be able to rely on those systems. Where they can't rely on the systems, maybe the security isn't strong enough, or maybe the systems aren't integrated enough, we try to provide meaningful recommendations to organizations. So it's not just an audit report they're getting, but they're really getting some next steps and helping them see, well, what are the root causes of these issues? What are the reasons that maybe our systems can't be control reliant or can't rely on controls? And get sort of the grassroots, here's the basic building blocks you need to start doing. My team has in-depth experience in both healthcare and in government and higher education, and so we can bring expertise to say, here's the system issues, here's the issues that other organizations like yours have seen with their systems, and here's how they've been able to get to control reliance and be able to improve their security. And so we hope to be able to do the same thing with yourselves.
Thanks, Anders. And so finally, I'd turn it over to Jody. As a firm, Eide Bailly audits a significant amount of university. We have a significant amount of university experience, including single audit experience with student financial aid, research and development, and the other major programs that the university has. So I'd have Jody talk a little bit more about that and along with what the audit of the system would mean for our firm.
Thanks, Dan. For the record, my name is Jody Doherty. I am from the Boise, Idaho office. I have been with Eide Bailly for over 20 years and have been in the government industry for that whole period. That's my main focus. And I think as Dan mentioned, I am the director of the government practice for Eide Bailly. And as part of that overall government practice, higher ed is one of our focuses. And while a lot of the regular governmental issues are applicable to higher ed, they're definitely have some unique issues that are differences between a local, state, and government and higher ed. So we do have a higher ed focus. I do partner several higher ed jobs myself, and we have several partners across the firm. We do have a student financial aid group of senior staffs and managers that we train every year on how to do a student financial aid audit, and that helps both the client and us when our staff can talk the talk and know what an ICER looks like and know how much they can award for direct loans or Pell and what's a compliance issue and what's not. So we send that team to do our student financial aid testing. So we will work very closely, our team will work with that, with the Reno and Las Vegas office to bring people in who know student financial aid, research and development, and whatever other, you know, the TACT grant or whatever other grant you may have that's a major program in that particular year to get the single audit done. The uniform guidance definitely, when it came out, it put a lot of hoops that we have to jump through on testing these single audits. So we do a lot of single audits. We do a lot of student financial aid. And our proposal mentioned how much student financial aid we do. And then I also wanted to, just in general, in the government industry, mention that we are big enough that we are at the table on the expert panels, and We're involved with GASB, and we do trainings, and we have webinars, and we help our clients implement the new standards when they come out. So, you know, higher ed, or if you're state and local government, GASB 84 is coming with fiduciary funds, and what that looks like, that's going to affect your colleges. And, you know, we're prepared to be right there with our clients to help them navigate through those new standards. Leases is coming. What does that mean to you? And, you know, what can we do to help implement that standard? And some that are out there in the proposal stat, you know, with the change in the financial statements and revenue recognition and all that, we are thought leaders in that as well, and are staying on abreast of that and trying to figure out where we need to be and give guidance and help our clients implement all these new standards that they keep coming out. Lost my train of thought there, sorry. And we like to provide local ANA updates in the government arena, so we do have them in Reno, we do have them here as well, and we invite our clients to come and hear what's happening with the standards and the updates, and 8 hours of CPE. Everybody's always looking for CPE. So I think, Dan, I'll turn it back over to you.
Absolutely. Thank you. And that's an excellent point with our GASB update that we provide every year. The system does send quite a few people to that update and has for the last several years as long as we've been putting it on. Obviously, that would be open to the system to continue to send people, you know, whether we end up as your auditors or not. But that is an additional resource that we provide, just being, you know, a large governmental audit firm in our state. So I think just in closing, final points would be, you know, we may not be as large as some of the other firms that are here today, but I think we definitely have the national resources to support the system. And on top of that, I think what we've got that no one else can provide are those local offices in each of the markets where the system has campuses. So I think that's an advantage to the system, provides a distinct advantage to us and our ability to do the audit. As long as I've been here, we've thought that the system would be the perfect audit for our Nevada offices, because we have offices where the system has campuses. You know, it's an exciting opportunity to be here and be considered to be a future auditor for the system. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions? Do you have a question for Michael?
Has your system ever been attacked?
That's a very good question. Maybe I'd have Anders answer that.
You're talking about iBailey's system ourselves?
Yes.
Our system it's constantly been bombarded, as any system is, but we put the appropriate security measures in place, and on an annual basis, we undergo penetration testing and vulnerability assessments and risk assessments on our own network and systems to make sure that we're up to speed. We do have a information security officer who also helps in the education of our employees, because one of the biggest threats to any organization are the employees, and you click on the link, and you can put the best firewalls in place, but if someone clicks on a link, you could bypass all that. And so we do ongoing training of our employees, making sure they understand what phishing emails look like, and so we don't fall victim to some of those types of things you're talking about.
Hey, Regents to my left here. Okay. Regent Hayes.
So you highlighted the strength of having many people in local offices here. I guess my first question is to Joe, actually. You said, you know, you can be there within 15 or 20 minutes to our different campuses if there's an emergency. Do we have audit emergencies that require that type of speedy response?
Thank you, Regent Hayes. Joe Sumber for the record. I've always joked that when there is an emergency, no one ever says, quick, call the auditor, right? But that said, when I was looking back historically, 10 years ago when this committee went through this process, a local presence was important. I think the scanning committee, which was made up of representatives that would have a lot of interface with whichever audit firm we choose, communication was top on just about everybody's list. So it does matter to a certain extent, although you hope that there's no, you know, actual emergencies. But
in most audit emergencies, a phone call or email is going to be probably how it's handled rather than coming in and physically going through and documents and.
Sure, Joe Sumner for the record. I think it comes down to style, right? And I'll give you an example just with myself, right? I have conversations every day with different business officers, and sometimes it can be handled in an email. Sometimes I want to pick up the phone and make sure they hear my voice. But quite often I will make sure I get onto campus to make sure we're talking face-to-face, that we're on the same page. And so I know for myself, I try to make sure that I have that option open. So just a different style either way. So, thanks.
To me, one of the important things of having people locally is, look, we're spending a lot of money on this. We're a government entity. Let's spend it on local talent and developing them. But I was trying to get from you more of the perspective of how does it help us to actually achieve the goal of the audit. So thanks. Where was I? No, I guess that was really the big one for you guys. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Maybe I'll just add one final comment. In addition, you know, we're not just talking audit emergencies, but just general communication about sensitive issues or, you know, even just meetings, being able to meet face-to-face with whoever's involved in a particular issue. Agreed. Typically not a lot of audit emergencies that we would need to run up to campus, hopefully. But definitely just on any particular issue that came up, especially if it's something that doesn't need to be in writing or, you know, over the voicemail, it should be handled face-to-face. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Tammy Miramontes, for the record. Additionally, with all the new standards that are coming out, there are just, you know, standards flying out from GASB. I actually am one of those. I serve on the state and local government expert panel for the AICPA. And so we definitely are thought leaders in that area. But just in working with my existing clients now, in GASB 84 came out, fiduciary activities, oh my gosh, how in the world is that going to have, you know, how are we going to implement that? So just being able to sit across the table with somebody and brainstorm and being here locally to discuss those types of issues are also things we're talking about. So not necessarily emergencies, but just what's going on in the industry.
So I don't think it was part of the proposal, but in the past we've used our internal audit team to help supplement our external auditor, and that's saved us some money. Is that something that you would be open to in this contract?
Absolutely, yeah. For the record, Dan Carter. It's certainly something we're able to do. We certainly do it for some of our other clients. I think, Renee, we were talking earlier that we are able to utilize internal audit to reduce our time spent on the engagement as well as our fees on those engagements. So that certainly could be negotiated for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't recall specifically, but do you have any startup costs that you're billing outside of the regular yearly cost?
We don't. We haven't included any additional amount in the first year. We put a lot of time and effort into the budget that we presented so that the university system can plan for the expenses of the audit on a go-forward basis. So that's kind of spread over the three-year engagement. We haven't historically for any client in the first year added additional fees. It's kind of it's our learning curve to get up to speed and not passing those costs along to the system. So,
okay. Questions from anybody else? Regent DelCarlo.
Thank you, Chair Carter. Since I've asked everyone else, tell me about your investment in technology, because we know that it's changing rapidly and it's changing how you do business too. So, and how will that affect us and our pricing going forward?
Absolutely, that's a great question. And I think Anders is again the best person to answer that.
Sure, again, Anders Erickson. IBILL is investing considerably in technology. In fact, in the last couple of years, what we've done is identified a chief innovation officer. And so this is one of the top people in the firm, and his sole purpose is he's got a team together and they're identifying investments in technology and how to continue making this digital transition, not just for Ide Bailey, but for our clients. So looking into investment of areas of artificial intelligence and data analytics, my area is cybersecurity, considerable investments in those things, not only to make us relevant in the future, but also to be able to bring those tools to our clients to be able to reduce costs and make it more efficient on it.
Fantastic. Any other questions? Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Well,
no, I don't have a question. I was going to make a motion.
Let's give just a couple seconds to Regent Carvalho?
From listening to the previous committee meeting where Chair Stevens asked for this to be done because of the long-term relationship with Grant Thornton, and given your experience in this arena, Mr. Sunbury, do you feel that it's important to engage different external auditors periodically? I see in some of the information that was given to us that one auditor has been engaged for 60 years by one governmental entity. Is this something that you feel is important to do, this exercise to have different auditors engage with us, or do you feel that the benefit in a long-term relationship outweighs that new relationship?
Thank you for the question. Excellent question. Joe Sunberg for the record. So an auditor's favorite answer is it depends. And I'm going to start there. I won't completely sidestep your question because it's a good one. I guess two thoughts on that. My background, I worked previously before coming to the system for a publicly traded company. So the requirements in the SEC are not necessarily requirements to switch audit firms, but there are 5-year requirements to switch audit partners. So you're not developing, the idea being you don't want an Enron situation or a HealthSouth situation, right? And so you don't want necessarily those relationships. That said, that doesn't necessarily apply to the governmental sector. So that's why you can see some of the longer relationships, longer standing relationships that you've had. So my background, I've seen sort of the partner rotation, if you will. I do think there's a lot to be gained when someone has familiarity with our system, and that is part of the reason why our incumbent auditors were invited to bid. But I think ultimately the committee's thoughts were if that relationship was going to continue, it should go through that public bid process and make sure that that everyone else had a fair shot because it had been so long. So I don't have a dog in the fight per se, but there are some benefits to having that new set of eyes, so to speak. But there's also benefits to having the longstanding relationship. So I apologize for my very gray answer, but thank you.
Regent Hayes.
Thank you, Chair Carter. I was going to make a motion that we recommend to the board that we hire CLA as our external auditors. I thought their combination of healthcare and higher ed system experience was outstanding. I mean, first of all, as Joe pointed out before, and I mean, the screening committee sent us 3 groups that will be fine with any of the 3. I mean, they're all excellent and will more than adequately serve our purposes. I just thought the combination of healthcare and higher ed system experience that they had was great, and kind of what Joe touched on the end of having that fresh set of eyes to look at things from maybe a different way. I thought that would be the best combination of the 3 for us. So that's my motion, is to recommend them to the, I think that'd be the appropriate motion, right? Where's counsel? Well, we don't have, is to recommend them to the full board that they become our external auditors for the years ending June 30th, 2019, 2020, and 2021.
Ms. DeGalicia for counsel. For counsel's office, that motion is certainly timely and appropriate.
Do we have a second? Yeah, motion fails for lack of a second. Sure. We can just have a discussion as well if you would like.
I'm sorry?
We can have a discussion if you would like as well before there's another motion.
I thought we'd have a little more in-depth discussion before the motions, but that's okay. This is directed to you too, Joe Sunbury. This is a pretty new committee, and this is a big, big first vote. I mean, I take this responsibility very seriously, and this is not a background I have. I've done internal control for a in a previous job, but certainly not. I'm no auditor or a CPA or any of that. And this is a long contract. So a couple questions. So this is the first time in 10 years that this has gone to bid?
Jill Summer, for the record, that's correct.
Okay. And my second one is, have we involved our business managers, our CFOs? Because this greatly affects them, greatly. I mean, they've obviously, I guess, read proposals, maybe. They see what we see, and do they have an opinion on who we should stay or change? I mean, can you help me there?
Absolutely, Joe Sommer, for the record. And great question, right? And so earlier when I referenced the scanning committee that was put together, it was made up of just those types of people, right, who have a lot of interface in this world, who are knowledgeable in this world, live and breathe accounting even more than I do, right? And then we also included some financial aid representation, since that's a huge part, as you guys saw in the hours with the uniform guidance and single audits. So, personally, I've had the benefit and pleasure of working in public accounting previously and in my internal audit role, you know, knowing a lot of public accounting firms. I think any of these three firms are well-known nationally. They're reputable. They're capable. And that's why the scanning committee felt it important to give all three of them a chance in front of the audit committee, right? So I don't want to give you a super long answer to a short question, but I do think it's appropriate perhaps to let the audit committee know sort of where the scanning committee was coming from, what was important to them, and just how close that separation was. So I do have the numbers in front of me here. So the committee, which was made up of eight individuals with the accounting experience across the system, cumulatively, with the lower number being the top rank, they had Ide Bailey ranked number one with 1.75, Grant Thornton just behind with 1.88, and Clifton Larson Allen just behind that with 2.0. And it was so close, just, you know, a fraction here and there, a hair here and there, that we felt it was important to let all three be heard and let the audit committee digest and, as you pointed out, make a well-informed decision, because it is it's a large contract for 3 years. So, thank you.
Virginia Hayes.
I was just curious, how many groups did the scanning committee look at?
Joe Summer, for the record, we had five qualified firms bid, and we were able to narrow it to three. So there was a significant drop off from three.
Without naming the names of those other companies, what were their scores?
Their scores were 4.13 and 4.5.
Okay, so when you say it's a slight difference, I just wanted some context. So sure. It really is a very okay.
Absolutely, thanks.
Regent DiCarlo.
Thank you, Chair Carter. Would it be reasonable if we were to rank them and then the highest number gets the bid, like we've done for the projects, you know what I'm saying? Sure. Rather than someone make a motion, and obviously we didn't get a second on that one, so those of us on the committee would rank them 1, 2, 3, and then take those numerical scores, add them up, and decide if one's the top or three's the bottom or however we do it, to at least we give a more objective, because this could be very subjective for some of us that don't have the depth of expertise here.
I think it might actually be helpful just to go down the line of our members and just have them share their thoughts real quick, and then maybe we can rank order from there or in our comments, see if any particular one kind of pops out. Does that sound reasonable? Do you want to start us out, Regent McMichael?
Well, I don't feel at this time we should jump ship. I believe we should continue with the same firm that we have now. I don't see any degrees of separation in all three that would warrant picking one of it over the other than the fact that the one firm that we have right now, we know.
Okay. Regent Hayes.
First, we got all those folks standing out in the hall. This is a public meeting. They can come in here if they wanted to.
Yeah, you can come in if you'd like.
Or you can stay out there and watch us on TV. That's fine. But like I said before, I mean, all three, as Joe pointed out, were qualified. That's why they were sent to us. We had the same group for about 10 years, and as they pointed out, they did a kind of shift in who they're bringing to us, which makes me think, why didn't they do that before? Did they not value the business enough to give us the A-team before until they realized they could lose it? And I thought that was a little disrespectful of us as a client, that they waited to make the shift to bring the A-team until after it was up for bid. I like I said, I liked the presentation of CLE. It looked like they brought their A-team to us. All of them are very qualified, but I thought they had the best mix of national size compared to experience in healthcare and education, and to me, they just stood out.
I'll go last. Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you, Chair Carter. A 10-year relationship is a tough to walk away from, I have to say that. And I don't have the experience to know if we've had issues for us to walk away from that. And it does take time to establish new relationships. However, I was very impressed with Ide Bailey and the fact that they're so on the ground in Nevada and the fact that they're even in Elko. And I'm familiar enough with the firm that I know they have purchased over the time other Nevada firms. So I like that Nevada connection, and I agree with our auditor, Sunbury, that they're all three very well qualified. And I think there should be some weight given to our the eight people that you worked with, our business managers and stuff. So, I mean, I would go with Ide Bailey as my first choice.
Regent Lieberman?
I love the fact that one of the firms has so much local or statewide presence, and the fact that there's an office in Elko really means that that area of the state and GBC gets the focus that they sometimes don't get because of their location. I also believe that we've had both challenges and opportunities within the audit system on our various campuses, and I don't know that that is a reflection of our auditors, so I'd be very comfortable staying with where we are, because it's not their fault that we've had challenges and opportunities on our campuses. And that said, the firm with the most local experience, I was least impressed with their overall presentation, but I love the fact that they have a presence in Nevada. So I'm really torn, and I guess I would stay with what we have unless there's a reason not to. And I would value Joe's opinion and the business officers very much in that regard.
Regent Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I feel the same way as Regent McMichael. We've been with this company, and since there's no clear-cut, far separation in the point score, that made a difference. If it's not broke, don't fix it, and we haven't had a problem with them. But all three companies seem very worthy of consideration. I want to add that also.
So my thoughts are, she's not on the committee. Well, we'll get her thoughts a little bit last. So my thoughts are, you know, we all three are fine. I think the one that has the local presence is great that it's local. I'm a little concerned about CLA just because the numbers are so far off hour-wise from Grant Thornton and Ide Bailey, and maybe they've got it figured out, and maybe that's our gain, that we're going to be saving more hours and things like that. But I'm a little concerned about that. So I'm not necessarily sold anyway. Kind of like Regent Lieberman, I think Ide Bailey's presentation was probably the least, in my opinion, the least effective of the three.
So I would favor a motion. Or Amy, do you want to add anything? Just being a guest here? No? Does anybody have a secondary motion here, a motion, or do we just want to rank them? Do you have a motion?
I'll go for it.
Okay. Regent Perkins?
I move that we, as a board, select Grant Thornton to suggest to the full board.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Should we have a roll call vote?
That's up to you. It doesn't hurt, but you don't have to. There's nothing that says you have to.
Okay. Let's go on and have a roll call vote. Angela, I see her sitting up there.
Regent Carter?
Yes.
Regent Hayes?
Yes.
Oh, sorry, I forgot the mic. Yes.
Regent Del Carlo?
Yeah.
Regent Del Carlo?
Yeah.
Regent Lieberman?
Yes.
Regent McMichael?
Yes.
And Regent Perkins?
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously. This was still a good practice to do, even though we selected the same folks after having them for a decade. I think it was still a good process to go through and rebid it. And Mr. Sunbury, do you want to add a few comments? No? You're good. Okay.
Chair Carter?
Yes.
I just want to point out so everyone knows this now will go to the, your recommendation goes to the full,
sure, to the full board
at 1 o'clock. So that's when the final decision is made. Thank you.
Yep. Comment? Yes.
For the record, in this committee now, can I ask that we not, that we work with Joe Sunbury and his team to not let this go another 10 years before
Absolutely.
We have this discussion again? We need to do it every 3 to 5 or something like that.
Yes. And Regent Hayes?
Even though they're all standing out in the lobby and not here, I just wanted to thank all the groups. I've been part of RFP processes on the other side, and I know what kind of resources and time and effort that go into that. And sometimes women at companies that don't want to go through that because it is such a cumbersome process that you took the time to do that and to learn about us and to come here. I appreciate, and all three of you were outstanding, and that's why you got to this point, and I just want to thank you.
As well, I'm very thankful that we had three applicants. All were perfectly qualified, and any of them could have ended up with the project today. So let's go on to item 4, new business. Do we have any new business? So we'll go to public comment. Public comment in Elko.
No public comment from Elko.
Public comment in Reno.
No public comment in Reno.
Public comment in Las Vegas. This meeting's adjourned. We'll be having a full board meeting at 1 o'clock.